Blog Talk Radio.
Please check out the Barefoot is Legal radio show right here on Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, that is 10:30 a.m. to noon Pacific Time, as we show you all about your barefoot rights and living a barefoot lifestyle. And for more information about the 501c3 nonprofit Barefoot is Legal, please check out barefootislegal.org.
Do you like talking about health matters? Do you struggle with your weight? Are you sick and tired of feeling sick and tired?
Why are you talking in that tone? What's with your voice?
Well, I was watching a bunch of conspiracy videos on YouTube, and they sound more ominous and compelling when the voices are, like, really low and scary.
You're ridiculous.
No, seriously. Check it out. Do you like vegetables? Are you presently living gluten-free? Are you a member of a secret society?
That'll do.
Are you in the Illuminati? Are you a Jesuit?
Really?
Do you vacation at Bohemian Grove?
Come on, man! Join us Mondays here at 5:30 p.m. Mountain Standard Time for Mental Acumen with Donald and Christy Rose here on FreedomizerRadio.com.
Do you need male enhancements? Do you need iodine? Do you want some colloidal silver? Order now while supplies last.
Okay, class, we want to talk about what we learned during the lockdown. The first question is, what did we learn during the quarantine, kids? Susie.
That government overreach is real.
What about you, Johnny? We went from home of the brave to home of the government slave. And you, Michael?
We need to refresh the tree of liberty.
What about you, Diane?
So many sheep are willing to give up their rights because of a little fear.
Very good, class.
The following message is sponsored by Truth. Are you or someone you know suffering from sheepalism? Sheepalism is a debilitating disorder which affects a person's entire worldview and is characterized by ignorance, denial, abandonment of basic morals and values. An unwillingness to think critically about things read or heard by mainstream media is a strong sign that you have been affected. Fortunately, sheepalism is treatable in many cases. Treatment may include, but is not limited to, training to help the patient understand that truth is being intentionally withheld. Help in understanding that assumptions and speculations do not qualify as evidence for truth. Living with sheepalism is frustrating. Thankfully, there's hope for those suffering this debilitating condition. If you or someone you know is dealing with sheepalism, please contact your local Truth Movement for treatment. They're standing by to help you now, and remember, you're not alone. Side effects of treatment may or may not include shortness of breath, migraines, anaphylactic shock, and a worst scenario heart attack. See your support specialist for details.
Welcome back to Mental Acumen here on FreedomizerRadio.com with Donald and Christy Rose.
Hello, everyone.
We talk about health matters, mental health matters, and whatever matters to you. We started back in May of this year, and we're here every Monday at 5:30 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. You can find our older episodes here on freedomizerradio.com or on the Freedomizer Radio podcast, and I also have them listed on our website, mentalacumenradio.com. And also on our website, you can find our social media links and any information that we post in between shows, in addition to our link each week for the show. And we want you to share the show with friends and family. Call in during our live on air time, so that's 5:30 Mountain Standard Time, and we go in for an hour and a half, so until 7 o'clock you can call in and talk to us on air, even if it's interrupting our topic that we're working on. The number is 319-527-6208, and press number 1. If you receive value from our show, please rate and review the Freedomizer Radio podcast or visit our website where you can like any of our posts or comment on them. And we want you to think globally and act locally. We do this here in our local area by supporting our farmers markets and also helping support the nonprofit organization Duncan's Place Cat Sanctuary.org. So my health coaching information is all on coachchristie.com. That's CoachChristie. And I've partnered with FullScript so I can help you find vitamin recommendations. And, of course, I practice bioindividuality. So visit my website or message us on the Mental Acumen Radio website for more information on how to get a free health history consultation and to set up some one-on-one health coaching. And let's start with you, Donald. What's your new and good for this week?
Wait, I went first last time.
That's okay.
What is new and good with me this week is I'm thankful once again for my health, and I'm very thankful for having a bit of a reprieve from the fires after we had a really bad week. This last week we've had a bit of a, I don't know, it's like we had this weird thing out in the yard and on the cars these past couple of days that we haven't seen in forever, is morning dew.
Mm-hmm.
We got cool enough to hit our dew point, and hopefully, you know, these types of things are helping the firefighters up there in the mountains, as we had a couple of days where you could start to see the fires here from town, you know, and a lot of the neighborhoods and stuff in the foothills there have been evacuated over this last week. So I'm very thankful for, you know, my family and my health, and I'm thankful that we have, you know, caring people that give of themselves, you know, like these firefighters do, because this, you know, whether or not if they are agents of the state, you know, these types of things or whatever today, but I'm thankful because I've met a good handful of these young men, and there may be women in there amongst them, but the ones that I've met are these young men from all over this land. I met a couple of gentlemen from Alaska a couple weeks ago. Met some more people from Kentucky this last week that are all being flown in here to help fight this monster fire that we've been working on here forever. But I'm thankful that we're getting some help from good old Mother Nature, right? And you know, they're able to get some new fire lines down, and hopefully by this time next week we'll be talking about what's new and good is that the fires are out and we're out and about walking in the fall, beautiful weather, and enjoying some good air, which we haven't got to do in a long time around here in this part of the world. That, and I'm very thankful to be out of debt. You know, I turned a corner this last week, and in the really strange, you know, weird economy that we're seeing happen right now, and with all of the really horrific
unemployment numbers that keep coming back on a daily basis. I'm glad that I'm still able to work and make money and not be saddled with any debt. So that, and you know, I'll just go ahead and add one little asterisk on there that I was very thankful to hit up our farmer's market and get some of the best tomatoes, because I think it can, you can call it like a tomato withdrawal after we finished our tomatoes that we brought back from Oklahoma. I was like, well, now what? I can't go back to store-bought. And then we went to the farmer's market, and you picked out those, and I was just, oh, yay. I can, and I'm not the tomato lover in this family. Christy is. And it's something that I saw my mom do my entire life. Tomatoes, salt, eat, right? And Christy added a new wrinkle to it. Just put a little dollop of mayonnaise on top of it, and a little salt with it. And yeah, so yummy, so yummy. But, yeah, very thankful to get the good organic vegetables from our local farmer's market, because it's getting close to crunch time, as they advertise that, you know, they run from April to November around here. So getting down to the nitty gritty on the farmers markets around here, unfortunately. Like we've talked before, I'm sure that'd be a big selling point for people out in like California and these places, that you could have a farmers market there, you know, year round. But, you know, now you can't go outside anymore in California, but I digress. But that's pretty much it. It's been a pretty slow week for me. Been doing a lot of working. I'm thankful that, you know, I'm glad that, you know, you and I have gotten back to diving back into our book after a little short hiatus. Just so much to keep up with on the news cycle here recently. Mm-hmm. You know, that it's been keeping my attention elsewhere than, you know, the book. But I will say that, yeah, maybe I should get back into my reading so that I can use it as a diversion, you know. But that's about it for me. And what is new and good with you, Christy Rose?
Probably my favorite part was the farmer's market. We had some amazing tamales, and we got.
See, I wasn't even going to mention it, because that sounds like a fatty thing to do, is having tamales for breakfast while in the car.
We've mentioned that we're foodies, and so when we find something that is top drawer, yeah, we have to be a repeat customer.
Shout out to Esmeralda's Tamales.
Those tamales are top drawer. She always makes really good salsa, too. So we got some salsa. And we decided before we went in, though, that we didn't need some of those, you know, not necessary items like the jams and jellies. And so it was pretty easy to walk right to some vegetables and get the things that we needed. And it is prime time for apples and pears. They'll be out there till probably the end of the farmer's market. And I know last year we got that Thanksgiving box that was full of apples and pears, and Donnie was worried we'd waste it, but we didn't.
So true.
It was so good. We didn't even realize there were that many pears, or that their pears were that good, but they are the most amazing pears for sure, and I'm not even a pear-loving person. Another thing is I finally feel like I'm above water on some of my schoolwork. I'm not falling behind like I felt like I was the last session, because I just had too many very in-depth classes, because I was taking the three classes at once, but now I feel like I got my homework and quiz done for my a little bit ahead of schedule, a few days ahead of schedule this time. So, like, if I can keep this trend up, then I won't be turning things in at the last minute. And because when I'm not working, I feel like I at least should be able to keep on top of my schoolwork. And I guess the last thing is I'm excited that I still feel like my arms and upper body are getting a little bit stronger from mm-hmm. doing all my exercises consistently.
Yes.
It was difficult. It's difficult to be consistent when it's either painful or you're not strong enough.
Yeah.
And so building up strength and doing those exercises every single day, even if it's just a handful of something, you don't even have to exercise for an hour. It can be 5 minutes, but you feel stronger every day doing 5 minutes at a time.
Sure. And yeah, that's a really good point about consistency, because, you know, I allot myself the two off days, today mm-hmm. being one of them, right?
You need to rest your muscles sometimes.
This is a lot like my Sabbath, right? I don't really work, and I don't really work out. I will play.
Unless we go exercise for fun, because that's been a big thing during the summer and stuff for sure.
Agreed. And you never know. I may end up going on a bike ride in the middle of the night tonight. But yeah, I usually allot myself those you know, day or two where I'm not doing that, you know. And, yeah, remaining consistent, especially.
It's too easy to fall out of the habit. And so it takes some, like, and that's why another reason that I'm so glad we did that episode on spouses motivating one another, because that does. You know, when Donnie says, well, yeah, I feel like I did more squats today than I did yesterday. And I'm like, well, I don't want to be the, you know, fatty of the group. So I'm going to go do my exercises real quick.
Well, and it's just been really tough, you know, during the fire season here because. Me, I would always, you know, I think I would mention this on the show here, that I like to couple in my meditation and sometimes listening to a podcast or listening to an audiobook, mix that in with, like, my bike ride, right? Because that's whenever I'm able to quiet my mind.
And they call it a moving meditation.
Right. We'll go with that. That's a good one. And I get very lost in what I'm listening to at those times. I mean, I can't remember how many times where the speaker that's I'm listening to will say something where I just like, okay, I have to pull over, I have to stop while I'm cycling, and I have to stand there like a dummy on the side of the road, like, no, he did not just say that. You know, this type of thing where I'm just having this open dialogue in my head, you know, or. Same thing with, like, you know, like I said, with an audible book that I'm listening to. Like, wait, no, he didn't. I have to, like, pull over and pull my phone out and hit that backwards button about a few times and replay what I just listened to. And, like, oh, hell no. It just blew my mind.
And you also, at the same time, almost forget you're bicycling. Your body's going through the motions, but you're not going, oh, this is hard to do or any of that stuff.
Yes.
Because that's called flow when you're just in the moment. Even if you're listening to an audiobook or podcast, you're in flow.
And that's will manifest itself that night or the next day whenever I say to you, man, my things are really tight right here. I think I went too hard yesterday on the...
Those are the best kind of exercises, though, when it's so either fun or not in your head where you're going, oh, five more steps. Because I know when I was running, if I didn't use some kind of earbuds or whatever, I'd be like, okay, I got this. Half more mile, one more mile. Instead of focusing on, like, how much more you have to do or how long you can hold a yoga pose or whatever.
Right.
Just tuning out, because I know the best gym workouts we did, just tuned out, put our earbuds in, and like, wow, I'm hot now and sweaty, let's go.
I remember that one time you and I were working out at the gym, and I had just recently discovered the new album that I had been waiting for or whatever. I'm like, I'm going to listen to this new album while we work out, so no offense if I'm not talking to you or whatever. You're like, okay, that's fine. And you're like, how long is this album? Because it was like over an hour long, and you were like all ready to like get off of the treadmill there, and I'm just like huffing and puffing, like, yeah, come on back, let's do this. All pumped up and everything. You're like, what are you listening to? Never mind. But, you know, play a couple ads and let's get headlong into our topic for today, because we got.
You want to do a reminder of what our topic is?
Oh, sure. Yeah, last week we were talking about mind, body, and the word, right? That's what we titled this show, and we started talking about language and communication, talking about words, jargon, lexicon,
how they tie to emotions,
and how they tie into emotions. We talked about orators. And sophists and what sophistry is, and how orators run the world. We talked about politicians, salesmen, clergymen, preachers, and teachers and professors. And we started talking about emotional words and emotionally packed words and words and emotion. And we touched on this experiment that was done by a scientist named Emoto. Can't remember his first name off the top of my head, but it was his water experiment that they did with the recrystallization of these water samples that were fed negative emotionally charged words and positive, you know, charged words. And we left off segueing into about verbal abuse and abuse of
words and language.
Words and language. And I think we're going to pick up there whenever we come back from break.
Sounds good.
All right.
America. What is America's destiny? What is best for our nation, our people? What is just, true justice? We have to think about all these things together as a people. To contemplate our future, to live up to our dream, we must have vision. We as a people will revive our nation's commitment to faith, to what our Constitution calls the free exercise of religion, including, of course, prayer. Through prayer, faith can be restored. We as a people are called to a greater purpose than ourselves. We are not only a beacon to the world, but we should be servants to each other, to encourage each other, to help each other, to lift up each other, our fellow Americans, that we may all prosper together. We have to act on faith with the sure knowledge that we are pursuing the right goals and doing the right things. We will build a stronger country by building stronger families. Families are the building blocks of society, of a nation. By turning to faith, we will be the kind of nation, the kind of people God intends us to be.
I am Kanye West, and I approve this message.
Kanye 2020. That's awesome.
Do you struggle with your health? Do you have a tough time decoding all the noise out there about health and wellness? We all do. Join us as we learn and grow our way forward in a more positive, autonomous, liberty-minded way. How can we claim personal independence if we don't have autonomy and control over our own bodies and, more importantly, our minds?
From the foods that we eat to the media that we consume, we have a duty as freedom-loving individuals to claim our independence of ourselves. From GMOs, to medicines, to vaccines, governmental tyranny, or perhaps exchanging a good recipe. No topic is off limits.
Join us here on Freedomizer Radio on Monday evenings at 5:30 Mountain Standard Time for Mental Acumen with Donald and Christy Rhodes. Hope to see you there.
Radio listeners, you all know that the reason for global cooling is global warming. Well, we here at Lake Havasu Snow Removal want to remind everyone that we can plow your driveway or street 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. We are available in the Lake Havasu, Phoenix, and soon-to-be Tucson areas in the cold Arizona desert. So, if your driveway is backed up in the middle of April or in the frozen tundra season of August, please call 855-NO-AZ-SNOW today. Any time of day, any time of night, Lake Havasu Snow Removal will clear your driveway in freezing cold tundra of Arizona. Thank you.
Hey, everyone. Proof here. Just wanted to ask you guys, are you guys tired of all the mask ordinances that are passing all over the place, with people telling you that you're not allowed to buy and sell unless you have a piece of fabric over your face? Well, we sure are tired of it. Please check out realbarefaceislegal.org and help us get together to fight these mask ordinances. You can also find Bareface Is Legal on Facebook, either as a group or a business page. Anyway, help us fight back against these stupid mask mandates. RealBareFaceIsLegal.org.
Welcome back.
Welcome back.
All right. So, again, last week we left off, we were talking about emotionally charged language. Do you remember?
Yes.
And this is kind of, you know, dovetailed off into our second talking point in, you know, emotional, you know, language and your words with emotion. And it was, you know, getting into sort of a touchy subject. We'll call it, you know, verbal abuse or abusive language, right?
Yeah, it is a sensitive topic. So if this hits too close to home, feel free to go ahead and turn us off. But it is good to kind of give a little spoiler.
Or go back and listen to us later, whenever you can.
Yes, you know. Because it's important, but it's definitely the timing has to be right for you to be able to absorb this content.
Because, you know, the first thing that comes to mind is just, you know, cussing somebody out. You see two people having an argument on the street, and they're just, you know, calling each other everything under the sun, right? Usually, most often, nobody really does not deny that, you know, these two are verbally bashing each other.
Yeah.
Right?
It's obvious out in the open.
But whenever I think of, you know, abusive, that's kind of like that's kind of like two fighters in the ring, right?
Mm-hmm.
Usually, in those situations, somebody can walk away, right? But it's like having, you know, mutual combatants, right? It's like two boxers in the ring, right? They both know what they're there for. They're there to beat the crap out of each other, right? And a lot of times, that's what you see whenever you see a situation like that, right? Two dum-dums, you know, cussing each other out. You know, they're mutual combatants usually, right? Trying to one-up one another and zing.
And I think most of us can say, because I know I have, I'm pretty sure you have seen this up close, impersonal, at maybe a grocery store or a restaurant where some customer gets all tempered and crazy and goes at the server, employee, customer service person or something. So we've seen this up front, even if we haven't done it ourselves.
Sure.
We can kind of relate that it's not always expected. It's not like the fighters where they go there on purpose expecting that. But
right. And usually, like I say, you know, somebody can duck out, right? But, you know, there's a lot of times whenever that's not the case, and I think it'd be a pretty safe argument to say, you know, that is abuse.
Yeah.
Right?
And even if it's in loudmouth kind, even if it's in a public place, and also if it's behind closed doors.
Sure. And, you know, spousal, you know, abuse, and with children, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is very commonplace, unfortunately, in our country, right? I've said it before, you know, with like physical abuse, you know, that children are the only ones in our country that it's still legal to hit, right? And we can play language games a lot, right? Well, I don't hit my kid, I discipline them, or I paddle them, or I swat them, or I spank them, right? But any of those aforementioned words, right, a child is the only one that it's legal to do those things to, right?
Well, it's not legal to necessarily verbally abuse everyone, but it happens anyway.
Of course.
It's more widely culturally accepted, maybe,
yes,
to verbally abuse a child.
Yes.
Even though it's not always, I mean, I think we've all seen this in a grocery store or a playground or somewhere.
Oh, sure.
An adult verbally bashing a child in some way, shape, or form. And
it's
more culturally accepted in that no one will step up for the child.
Yeah.
However, it's not good. It's still verbal abuse.
Right.
And it has even more of a lasting impact on a child, I believe, than an adult.
There was a situation that happened to me one time when my daughter was, I'll say she was somewhere between 5 and 6, and we went to a Walmart, right? So around this age is whenever, you know, you're starting to give your kid a little bit more, you know, freedom, right?
And they have more vocabulary.
And but it's like where you don't want to be the helicopter parent, right? but you don't want them to get too far either, right? It's this really tricky sort of fine line you're trying to toe at this time. And it, you do things like, you know, you go to the store, you say, okay, if you want to go look at toys, okay, I'm going to be right over here in the grocery department. Whenever you get done looking at toys, come find me in groceries.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I had something like that where my daughter wanted to go look at something in Walmart, and I said, okay, where are you going to be at? I'll be right over here. Okay. Well, long story short was, I lost her. Right? A lot of parents have had this happen before where they lost their kid, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm walking around Walmart, and I don't have exactly a small voice anyway, and I'm walking around Walmart basically yelling my daughter's name loudly. And finally, she comes out from where she was. The reason why she couldn't hear me was she was checking out car stereos, sitting over there jamming them and everything. Didn't hear me. And it scared me. By the time that she did come and find me, I was scared, right? And I ended up raising my voice, right? I said, don't you ever raise me. Just barking at her right there in the middle of Walmart, yeah. And I remember a woman stopping and looking at me, right? But because I wasn't, like, verbally bashing her, right, calling her stupid or anything like this, but I let her know, I said, I am scared. This is what happens when daddy gets scared. He gets mad. And, you know, and I remember going off on her, this woman looking at me, like, you know, first like I was crazy, you know. But then and that was one of those occasions where I needed to use some emotionally charged language to convey my message of fear to my kid at that time, right? Because it's like the same thing with, like, the dangerous things crossing the street whenever your kid runs out in front of a car. Right? You don't necessarily want to yank their arm out of their socket and beat the crap out of them right there. But they need to know what they did is dangerous and that you are scared and that they should be scared as well. They should feel this fear, right? But about, you know, the abusive language and stuff, you're right. You know, this is like in some segments of our society, you know, it's part of the culture, you know, and I'd like to think it's something, you know, we will eventually outgrow, but I would probably argue that until our education system has some sort of reformation, then I don't think that's really going to happen. We're just dum-dums breeding dum-dums. You know, and I'm not saying that in a, you know, mean-spirited, hyperbolic sort of way. I fall right into that category. You know, I was indoctrinated in the public school system and everything else. But, you know, this type of abuse, it begets, you know, psychological damage, and psychological trauma, and I remember when you and I was discussing, you know, our show and show notes, I remember we were talking about the Forrest Gump movie,
mm-hmm.
right? And we were talking about this with weaponized narratives and everything. But culture, as you said, right, in our culture, right, it's always held out there as in, you know, military service is honorable. Military service is just. Military service is a great career. Military, you know, and all these other, you know, platitudes that are tied into military service. And in the Forrest Gump movie, Lieutenant Dan, Forrest is talking about Lieutenant Dan, and in Lieutenant Dan's family, I'm going to do my Forrest Gump impression, okay?
Okay.
In Lieutenant Dan's family, I'm member of his family had fought and died in every major American war, right? And whenever it came Lieutenant Dan's time to serve, he went off to Vietnam, right? And he ends up getting his legs blown off, right? We all remember the story, don't we?
Yes.
And he becomes, you know, very angry, right, until he has his redemptive sort of moment in the storm on the sea that night, right? He makes peace with his, you know, narrative that he had been taught since he was a child, that, you know, he was part of this military family that was to go and fight. He even said right there to Forrest that, you know, he was supposed to die there on that battlefield, right? So he had been, you know, fed a narrative, and he had been, some could maybe argue that, you know, telling a child from a very young age that you are to go and fight and die in a war. And this is the height of patriotism, the height of your life's cause. You know,
honor for your family.
And, you know, and some people could be, you know, that it doesn't matter if you're a swordsman in Japan or China, like Mulan, or you're Lieutenant Dan, that some could argue that this is, you know, some psychological trauma being inflicted on a child whenever they're fed these narratives and this type of, you know, verbal abuse. And, you know, I would also maybe argue, you know, that, you know, if it's done in a religious context, maybe the original sin thing that, you know, because of the fall in the garden, right? They ate of the tree of knowledge, the fruit from the tree of knowledge, and because of this, we know good from evil, and therefore the original sin is now passed on to all of Adam's descendants. Therefore, any person born into the world carries this original sin with them. And some could argue, I don't want to get muddled down in this, but some could argue that, you know, telling children from the time that they're able to walk that they're sinners and bound for hell is kind of traumatizing as well, right? Whether or not you behold that to be true, that's a different argument for a different day, right? Because this, you know, both of those examples that we just gave are because adults hold these things to be sacred truths, right? This, the military thing we talked about with Lieutenant Dan and this type of thing are some really hardcore belief structures that are, you know, replete in American society.
And since we're kind of focused on children and them being the blunt of some of this abuse from adults, they also can have a hard time because of the internet, which we sometimes forget this as adults. I mean, as parents, we try to remember. However, we also think of our children as being in the same position we were when we were in their age, their grade, this kind of thing. And I sometimes forgot about the internet bullying and how those words can fit in with our topic here with language and communication and some negative consequences for their peers and the young children, because maybe they learned their aggressive behaviors too young and just decided to try them out on peers.
That's a good point. You know, it's very true because, you know, the stories, you know, back in the day, you know, they have the Little Rascals, you know, type of shows going from the way back when that, you know, deal with this type of subject of how to deal with a bully. And they all basically, you know, just go flatten the nose of the bully,
mm-hmm.
you know, whether or not the bully comes back and beats you up, still they usually won't mess with you again because they know that you're crazy enough to come and whack them in the face again.
That's what we were taught as children. You know, maybe, if somebody hurts your feelings too bad or if they hurt you physically, you have the right to defend yourself.
Sure.
And as a child, they don't have the vocabulary, the critical thinking, the spontaneity that comes with learning the language and being able to properly use it. So
sure.
Their defense is their physical defense. And now that's taken away because internet, they're not in the same room. Whereas bullies in my grade when I was young and in middle school and high school and stuff, someone would almost have to bully you face-to-face or leave a nasty note in your locker, but you knew who it was. Now it can be anonymous. They can make up fake screen names. And
sure.
They're not even in the same town or country. It was
the rumor mill, as they called it back in the day, huh?
Uh-huh. And so it's a whole different playing field, and it's hard for us as parents to because we didn't grow up with the same technology. It's hard for us to remember that children are battling against this every day, and so we have to equip them with the social skills and the critical skills. Unfortunately, right now, there's a lot of schools that are not attending in person, so this even makes this critically important developmental time socially for children. It really is a hurdle for them.
Yeah. I hope, you know, like I think we said this before on the show, that I would like to think that that would be a bright side, you know, a good outgrowth of these lockdowns and this fake pandemic,
mm-hmm.
would be that people start to explore other educational choices for our children. But
not just education. If we want to just focus on the language and the communication and the abuse and things that we've talked about, just having that extra time with spend with your child.
Yeah.
Taking advantage of maybe one parent needs to stay home because they're homeschooling or their choices of education have changed or the children are remote learning. Maybe either one parent needs to stay home or maybe a parent is laid off and then they're the one to stay home. Either way, I would say take advantage of this learning opportunity because children aren't hanging out with their peers, and keep that in mind. There's a lot of things you can teach them without them having to hang out with their peers and language and communication. In fact, it could be more educational because adults generally have a wider vocabulary, and if not, you stretch your brain and go learn some new words and learn some new vernacular.
Sure. And, you know, I was discussing this with my daughter, you know, fairly recently, and as we talked about, you know, going wireless, meaning, you know, not doing anything electronic after a certain time to do the wind down, and this kind of began the whole conversation about, you know, what we're reading, you know, and I shared with her a little bit about what I'm reading right now and the crazy stuff, and I asked her, you know, she's still, because she usually leans in toward like the fantasy type of books, and she said, "Oh no, that was like so 2019, Dad. No, I've moved on." Okay. So, you know, she moved on to something that I would say resembles more like graphic novels. It's like comic books with a bit more of a fantasy edge type of thing to it. And I had a couple of inputs, you know, so have you ever heard of this before? It was one of these type of things whenever I was a kid, you know. So, yeah, I totally get what you're saying about, having, you know, enough time to reconnect, if you will, right? Mm-hmm. This also begat a big question for me, which was, do you want to go fishing? Because I haven't been fishing in a while. I said, so let's make a plan. She goes, oh, next week? I said, I will say yes to that as long as the fires go out. If we get a good snow and puts all the fires out, it's on. So.
I have one more point that I'm curious before we go too far. Because, again, with the children, it's like when you get a theme and you sometimes go down that black hole, I get it. However, when you come to language and communication, there are so many parts to consider, and this has come up more recently for us because both of our children do this to us, where they call us out for certain vernacular that we use,
yes.
certain terms and jargon and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Because as over 40 here, we're kind of set in our ways with our vocabulary.
Sure.
And although we love to learn new words and we actually talk about communication and, of course, have these conversations amongst ourselves, we don't necessarily consider what the effect our particular word choices are having on the people within earshot.
Yeah.
And this goes back to, like, we couldn't change our grandparents, yet our children expect for us to only use certain words around them or in a certain context. And they get very heated, and this is a new training with their generation and their teachers, and they're TikTok and YouTube videos that we weren't privy to when we were younger. Right. We learned from our elders in our small group and our peers in our small group, and our, because we both grew up in, you know, not huge cities.
Well, our, and you know, the way it was always, you know, drilled into boys was, you know, sticks and stones can break my bones.
Yeah, we said that on the playground
but
all the time.
But words will never hurt me,
yeah.
Right?
Even though they really do hurt.
I'm rubber and you're glue, it bounces off me, it sticks to you.
Yes.
Right?
That was a child's defense mechanism at that point.
Right. But, yeah, I think the one that, you know, I was talking about was, it's something that, you know, it's a matter of perspective, mm-hmm. Right? I think, you know, whenever I was talking about a show we were watching, and I said, now, she was that tranny, right? I think I said the word tranny. And you're not supposed to say that. What? Well, you're not supposed to say tranny? Oh, it's trans. Okay. Yeah. Right. Because, you know, and that's so true, right? You know, and a lot of it, you know, a lot of political correctness is about, you know, in my opinion here, is about mind control, right? And whenever you use the term mind control, you don't necessarily, you know, it kind of garners this image of MK Ultra electrodes on the head with the scientist over there in the corner, you know, feeding things into the person's brain, mind control, right? Or the Manchurian candidate or something like this, right? But no, mind control can be seeing a commercial 20,000 times and then, you know, going around singing the jingle, you know? It's done its job whenever you go to work and sing the Arm & Hammer jingle, you know? More contemporary one is repeating bullet points that you hear your presidential person talking about, right? I'm an elephant, therefore I'm going to repeat all the elephant bullet points.
Yes.
Right? And then I heard my favorite, newsreader repeating those bullet points that the top elephant said, so that I'm going to repeat those back in my talking circles.
I have a question then that goes off of this. So if we're talking about verbal abuse, of course we've focused on children so far,
uh-huh.
But part of verbal abuse is, unfortunately, repeating the same negative thing, say something like, you're fat, all this, you're going to get fat if you eat that, you're fat, all these kind of things. If you repeat the item enough times, so can we then say that maybe the media, because they're repeating the COVID cases all the time, is verbally abusing us?
Oh, 100%. I would say that it's beyond verbal abuse and it's psychologically traumatizing us.
Yeah, they are definitely hitting because they have psychologists behind marketing. In fact, one of the top, because I was looking at the psychology degrees with ASU, and one of the top job titles on there basically is marketing.
Yeah.
And that's disturbing. I mean,
yeah.
I love learning psychology because I like to learn how I tick and in turn learn how other people tick, but in a good, positive way.
It's a real Pandora's box that you're opening, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I didn't even realize, and I may or may not read them or listen to them, but I noticed it on Audible because I listened to so many different books about psychology and learning and growing is all good stuff. Rich Dad, Poor Dad was a good one I just finished recently. But there's dark psychology about manipulation, and I'm like, well, you read these only if
uh-huh.
you're able to use that information for good or to use that to defend yourself. But I don't know. I'm not glad that the information is out there in some respects because, you know, some people, because I've listened to true crime for years, and there's been more than one case where the person had a book about how to be a serial killer, because I forget, that's one book, I think, or how to XYZ, whatever, some other bad thing. And
whenever I was young, I remember this being the book, The Anarchist Cookbook.
That's a big one, yes.
Yeah, right. They wanted to ban it from the library, you know, because you teach how to blow up bridges or make acid or something like this.
Which is another rabbit hole you could go down, the banned books from the library. Actually, from our library, Loveland Library, I get the tweets and Facebook posts because there is an ever-growing list of banned books.
Get out of town.
No, I'm serious. And this is a recent thing. And I don't know if it's because of the governmental politics and things that are going on, but the PC, which ties in with how our children are being raised, and we just saw a documentary basically about the scary stories to tell in the dark, and how they want to ban that.
That was shocking.
And
wasn't
that was I loved that book when I was a child.
Mm-hmm.
Like, loved it so much. I know I wore it out. I'm curious if I still have it.
That was funny to me because whenever they all said that during the documentary, that where they had them in the library, they were the like most warped and used books in the library.
And I think because I was trying to think during the documentary that we were watching, I was like, how in the world did I get my hands on that book? Because I haven't mentioned a lot about my family, but I was from a very poor family. We were not just broke. We were very poor, like barely had food on the table poor. And how in the world did I get a book that I had of my own that I, physically had that was not just from the library? And I'm pretty sure it was the book fair because that was one of the expenses.
Mm-hmm.
Anything school related, my parents were able to fork up the money for it. And the book fair was one. And you know how the book fair always had a special books for pretty cheap for just now they'd be more expensive, but maybe like a dollar or two when we were little.
Right.
There was the $1, the $5, $3.
I remember taking my daughter to the book fair and having that old man Momo.
They're like,
$13?
Yeah.
For a book? 17 pages, really? That's like 85 cents a page.
I guess I should have paid attention when I was younger because I also recently did my Strengths Finder test, and it was very accurate in my opinion, but obviously, I guess I've always been a collector and lover of books because I also have the Where the Sidewalk Ends book. And it was either that one or one other that I can't remember.
Silverman?
Yeah, Silverstein.
Silverstein,
I think
you.
So. There was another book. I forget
the
name of it.
I think I've read that one too.
Oh, I know I still have that one. I let my kids read Where the Sidewalk Ends. I think it's missing its jacket and it's been loved.
Sure.
There was one more that the author came to our class or our school when I was young, and I waited in line for an autograph. I don't remember the book. I know I still have it because I've never shown it to my kids, before they had moved out. And I'm like, maybe I should have paid attention that I loved books that much. I still love books.
Now, I wanted to touch on something before we move on from this. And it's kind of a weird thing in this, psychological trauma thing. And, using emotionally charged, verbally abusive language on children, of course, and how the reverse of that is also kind of psychologically damaging, especially for kids. And, that's the silent treatment, right? We always, you can always, peg the kids, whenever you talk to some children, just, random children, you can always peg the ones that their parents never talked to them. They're the ones that they don't have a very big vocabulary, and maybe they're older, still baby talking, things like this. But using, the silent treatment as, I don't know if you call it punishment or, but it's definitely, I would say, that's a psychologically damaging sort of thing for children.
Especially when it comes with the withholding of affection at the same time.
Yes.
When you couple it in with, we'll find no hugs and no kisses for you. As a small child, that can be very disturbing and life-altering for sure, because then they get into that's their weapon of choice as an adult, withholding affection from their spouse or their loved ones. And we need affection.
Yeah.
Donnie's reminded me, because I'm such an introvert, so many times, that you need to hug and you need to kiss and you need to hold hands and physically connect with other people to remind you you're not alone in this. We live in such a traumatic world these days, and we have to be careful, and we have to have people close to us.
Yeah. I think we mentioned it last week when we were talking about the book 1984.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the rebellion that Winston and the girl, I can't remember the name of the girl, that you know, when they're in their work environment, they keep, you know, sneaking glances to one another. And this eventually begets her dropping him a little note that says, you know, meet me here or there. And they meet outside of the grid, beyond the look of, beyond the eye of Big Brother. You know, they got outside of the cameras, right? Because God knows we have them everywhere now, don't we? You know, the Big Brother cameras. They're there for traffic safety. This is just, you know, they spent billions of dollars on these things just so they can clear up some insurance claims about car wrecks, okay? These are definitely not for tracking surveillance grid put in by your overlords, technical overlords. So that's definitely not okay. But in the book, that was, you know, their rebellion. Was them going out, and that was the first thing they did. They got naked and you know, hugged and kissed and made love, because that was outlawed. It was very, very, very taboo. Just that basic primal human nature thing to do.
Divide and conquer.
Sure.
That's how you're going to use the mind control as a weapon. And I want to mention, too, that before we get too far into our, we have about 30 minutes, but when we bring up these things about abuse and describe and talk about them, that what are we intending to do with this information? I think that by shining a light on it can help us to be more aware and not do this to others, because you can't change what's happened in the past. Sometimes it's hard to get out of a situation now. In fact, as far as spousal abuse goes, it takes a spouse about seven tries to actually get the ties broken from the person and from the abuser and move on. So we're not saying, you know, throw away all the abusers in your life, but maybe to start shining a light on them and recognizing what abuse is the first step. Of course, seek help.
Sure.
We're not the help necessarily, but we're shining a light on, we're learning and growing with you.
Yes.
But I highly recommend, if you need some counseling or some psychological help or some physical, mental help in any capacity, to reach out and get that help.
Amen to that. You know, what you said there is definitely true. And I think that I practice this sort of thing all the time whenever I talk to strangers. You know, you said before, you know, you think I'm just such a weird enigma because I talk to strangers.
You call everybody neighbor.
And it's such a strange thing to me. And a podcaster that I listen to has said this a few different times. And in our society, and in our, you know, I'm scare quoting here, in our culture, right, it's so perfectly normal for us to argue and fight about our sports.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I'm an OU Sooner fan, right? Because I grew up in Oklahoma, and it's just pretty much ingrained in my DNA that I'm, you know, sooner born, sooner bred, when I die, sooner dead. Right? And it's perfectly okay to argue sports with a Texas fan and hate on them and talk smack and this and that, right? And we see it around here with the Broncos and the Raiders and the Broncos and the Chiefs and all this other sort of stuff. And it's perfectly okay to go sit down in a sports bar somewhere and listen to two people arguing about this player versus this player. You know, can Muhammad Ali beat Mike Tyson? You know, these types of arguments, you know? But we're convinced to discuss these other topics like politics, religion, right? That these are taboo. You don't do those in open, you know, society, because you may say something offensive. Because somewhere along the lines, we've lost our ability to have civil discourse. And this is something I didn't come downloaded with, right? I've had to learn how to bite my tongue, and rather than just try to steamroll somebody with my keen intellect, is maybe just ask the right question, right? Because if you if you come at people from moral superiority, intellectual superiority, you're never going to get anywhere with anyone.
But if you
listen to people mm-hmm. and say, huh, I've never heard that before, and then you just ask a question or a carefully placed question, and whether or not if they think on that question or you know, that's on them, right? You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink, I guess. And if people don't want to think, you can't make them.
No.
But you can ask questions. That's the difference, as I see it, where we find ourselves today in this free and open society, right? I've heard it said, you know, you ask questions now, because there may be a point coming soon. We see the censorship, you know, more and more. There may be a time real soon that the question mark's taken off your keyboard, where you're not allowed to question the party anymore.
And I think it takes that much needed skill of critical thinking in order to ask the right question.
Agreed.
And I will be the first to admit, I thought I knew what critical thinking was, but it took me until recently before it really just drove home the ideal and just reiterated, because at this point in my life, I even use my critical thinking to question my textbooks. I'm like, these people are not our deity. They're not, you know, the end-all, be-all of knowledge. It needs to be fact-checked. It
sure.
needs to be researched.
Right.
And don't just take everything, especially even a textbook or anything that you hear or see on the media, as the hard and fast stamp blue make it true, because it's not necessarily.
And that will dovetail into our next point about weaponizing narratives.
Mm-hmm.
Weaponize language, weaponize narratives. And, you know, what you just said there about news, right? That is right at the top of the list, you know, of people that use a weaponized narrative. I call them news readers, right, because they're not newsmen or newswomen in any way anymore. I would point everyone to check out a documentary called Manufacturing Consent. Shows how these things can be drummed up, these weaponized narratives. They're just put out by something called the AP, the Associated Press. I'll leave it to everybody else to do their own research on what the AP is and what is Reuters, who owns these things. It's not a bunch of, you know, Scoop McKenzie's out there getting the, you know, like Jimmy, what's his name, and Clark Kent on the Superman books. That's not exactly, you know, true. It comes down over the wire, over the news wire, and we got people repeating it everywhere and everywhere. And weaponized narratives as they exist in our, you know, immediate sphere, political agendas, right? You have people on the left and people on the right. And these narratives get pushed out there. And as you put it, they're divide and conquer schemes almost every single time.
Mm-hmm.
The saber rattling and the build up to the Iraq and Afghanistan war comes to mind. At that time, I was looking at this saying, this is crap. We just got out of Iraq. It's been a decade or less since we were over there, because I had just gotten out of high school in 1990, and that was whenever Iraq Part 1, we know it as Desert Storm, got off and rolling. And it was basically a stand-up fight. Didn't last too long, right? They went in, did their thing, and steamrolled and liberated Kuwait, as the story was. But the lead up to that war was a bunch of BS. And then the lead up to this war was a bunch of BS. After 9/11, it was Okay, Osama bin Laden is hiding out in the mountains in around Afghanistan, maybe in Pakistan. Let's go and bomb those. And, you know, we spent a few months bombing the mountains of Tora Bora and everywhere else, you know. And it got up to after a while that the leaders that were in power at that time were like, well, there's no real good targets to be bombing in around Afghanistan. You know, we're just kind of twiddling our thumbs. We're pretty sure Saddam Hussein is who we're after. And there was a bunch of people. And then the narrative was weaponized real quickly as the saber rattling started with weapons of mass destruction. He's got him, he's got him, he's got him, he's got him. People, and you know, people in my age group will remember this, and people older than me will remember this, right? We had a conservative president sitting in the seat at that time, telling the people ad infinitum, right? That's a logical fallacy that's used whenever you repeat your narrative again and again. Just repeat it. And another one that they like to use is the ad nauseum. That's whenever you repeat the same narrative or the same argument until you're sick of hearing it. And this sort of stuff got rolled out to the American people. And it was strange because this was not that long ago, but it was a while ago. We had an anti-war movement at that time. People, and at that time, people on the left were coming out in droves saying, no, 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 we don't want this war. We'll give you the Afghanistan thing, but no, 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 no. Stay out of Iraq. No blood for oil. And this was the divide and conquer. Boom. The wedge came in right there. The conservatives were told their bullet points what to say. Okay, conservative people, start putting yellow ribbons on your trucks and on your cars. Put yellow ribbons on your house and on your trees. Make up signs that say support our troops. And if somebody says no blood for oil, you tell them they're unpatriotic and get the hell out of your country. And this stuff was everywhere. Everywhere. And it did exactly what it was designed to do. It divided us as a people. And then juxtapose that to where we find ourselves today, right? Where people on the left now get the opportunity to be in this moral high ground against crazy right-wing conservative people that say, I don't want to wear a mask. You're not compassionate. You have zero sympathy and zero empathy for your fellow man. Get out of our country.
Mm-hmm.
It's lunacy. It's like I'm living through an intelligence test all the time that we are failing. You know, mm-hmm. We're failing as a civilization because these things seem so very just in your face these days to me. Am I wrong on this?
And it's the worst thing that I've ever seen as far as majority rule.
Yeah.
That everyone, I mean, there's more people that wear the mask and think it's a good idea. And the vernacular is that compassion and empathy and safety and those big, meaningful words. Because, again, looking at my positive psychology book, when we think of children, we think that this is, I mean, obviously all kinds of abuse, verbal abuse, especially in the school bullying that we talked about, but especially when it's in the home day in and day out, it can have a strong effect. And when we think of kind of relating this to the media and how it's talking to us and repeating the same things all the time and we're considering it verbal abuse, children are more resilient. And that's been proven by studies that started back, I guess, in the 70s. But it still has some post-traumatic permanent damage, in my opinion, that can last forever. And as an adult, I feel like I'm more set and more concrete in a lot of my ways. What is this repeating of the same story doing? Obviously, I'm trying to use my critical thinking.
Uh-huh.
However, I still comply and wear my mask when I go lots of places because I don't like the confrontation. And then I bring that back into what is that doing for our health? When I relate, because I've done this ever since I started at IIN, relating everything, I mean, however minute, however tiny of a detail it seems, relating it back to my health. And there are ways for immunologists, I know the wellness way is the biggest one that I've been connected with, that can test your immune system. There are markers that have been testable for some amount of time, and most doctors are not interested in testing this because it doesn't create them revenue. I hate to say it like that, but that's how it is.
It is.
And sure. All of this verbal abuse has negative, potentially permanent physical ramifications that are unfortunate, and it starts with children. That's why we need to consider as adults, how can we help the children around us? In addition, how can we help our peers? Because those of us that maybe have reached our ages where we're tired of learning or not actively seeking information and just repeating what we hear on the news that's repeated to us a bazillion times a day, what defenses do we have against this?
You know, an allegorical example of what you're talking about. Do you remember the musical I took you to at the Lincoln Center?
Yes.
Chicago, right?
It was a good live show.
That was fantastic.
Back in the day when live shows were a real thing.
Do you remember, and we watched the movie as well, right? The lawyer that was played by Richard Gere in the movie, he does his song and dance. And what is he going to do? He's going to give them the old razzle-dazzle. And just in that musical number, it's laid out very, very plain. So he knows from the get-go that his client is guilty. His client is a cheating woman that was cheating on her husband and got into a tiff with her boyfriend. Pulls the gun out of her drawer and shoots him in cold blood.
So if you haven't seen Chicago, I highly recommend it. And spoiler alert, obviously.
Right. It's definitely for mature audiences. But,
yes.
But yes, she shoots him in cold blood. The lawyer knows this. He knows the whole story. But he has to do what? He has to weaponize a narrative. He has to create a story. Make it so fantastical. So emotionally charged. And then he has to what? He has to get someone to repeat it ad infinitum. And in the show, it was Mrs. I forget her name. She was played by, I can't remember the actress's name either. But she was the news reporter. And her part of the musical number was, she would always say, "It's understandable, understandable. It's reprehensible. It's so defensible." And they keep using all of the language that is garnering sympathy for this murderer. And all of the other press men that are the news repeaters of the day, they're back there dancing, doing the old song and dance, right? And they're all portrayed as marionettes, right? They're getting their strings pulled. They're all portrayed as marionettes in the background. And they're back there going, "Oh, yes," because he constructs the narrative, his lie, which was there was a struggle between the boyfriend and Roxy, and they both reached for the gun, and there was a struggle, and then the gun went off, and that's all that I remember, right? So they repeat this narrative, and they do it ad nauseum, ad infinitum. "Oh, yes, oh, yes, oh, yes, they both reach for the gun, the gun, the gun, the gun." And it culminates in this big razzle-dazzle in the courtroom where nothing's really about the facts. It's all about the emotion and the sales pitch that he's given the jury, right? And it's really, that's a fun little, anecdotal type of example of what you're talking about there. But this goes on every day. I mean, we live in razzle-dazzle land.
We're bombarded
with just crap. I mean, I have to receive a lot of this stuff secondhand because I get angry. I really do get angry.
Yeah, you don't even look at the news.
If I were to sit down and watch hours of MSNBC and this type of stuff, I'd be pretty disgruntled on a regular basis.
You've actually told some loved ones to turn off the TV
because
it's
so upsetting. But, you know, and I wanted to, you know, add one more, you know, little fallacious thing that I've noticed that it's kind of a new thing. It's been a new speak. You know, we go back to the 1984 language there. And this is something we call rebranding these days. And when anyone, to, you know, within the sound of my voice to understand the language that, you know, you're being bombarded with these days, whenever you start hearing the term the Great Reset, I hope it makes you raise an eyebrow and you're on your guard whenever you start to hear this language. The rebranding things, you know, one that comes to mind has been the climate change debate, right? The science is settled. We hear that all the time, right? It started out as global warming, global cooling, to climate change. Well, there's a bigger agenda at play in that. I don't want to get off into that rabbit hole. I'll leave that for everyone to do their own research. But they will rebrand it when necessary, as long as they're controlling the narrative, right? And I would say that the Great Reset is the newest one that's came across my screen. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. Great Reset will be a transformation of our society. What it's transforming into, we'll talk about that for sure. But do you remember some of those quotes that I sent to you? Could you pull some of those up for me? Because I wanted to throw a couple of those quotes out. You know, George Orwell. Let's see. We were talking about George Orwell. George Orwell, his real name was Eric Blair. And
I think you said that last time. I think you
did
got it right.
I did say that last week. And so George Orwell was just his pseudonym. But he had said this quote about people having a common held belief, and
which means the verbal abuse is doing its job.
I'm sorry. Let me see if I can pull this quote up real quick.
It's not working.
That was not the one that I needed. But anyway, believe, and usually whenever they start to test this belief or they get run up against a big dose of reality, it's usually on a battlefield. But I don't really get muddled down in that one. These weaponized narratives that we see in the news day in and day out, right? It's propaganda,
mm-hmm.
Pure and simple.
Which is psychology and manipulation.
Right. And you know, we don't call it propaganda any longer. I believe we had talked about this before, and that propaganda became a dirty word,
mm-hmm.
after the Nazis had their ministry of propaganda. And we just see if this rings true with what we hear day in and day out. If you tell a lie big enough and keep repeating it, people will eventually come to believe it. The lie can be maintained only for such time as the state can shield the people from the political, economic, and/or military consequences of the lie. It thus becomes vitally important for the state to use all of its power to repress dissent. For the truth is the mortal enemy of the lie. And thus, by extension, the truth is the greatest enemy of the state. Do you know who said that? Joseph Goebbels. Do you know who Joseph Goebbels was?
No.
He was a Nazi. He was the number one. He was the Ministry of Propaganda leader. He was a psycho, pure and simple. He ended up killing his children and suiciding himself and his wife in the bunker and everything. And he says, another quote from Joseph Goebbels, quote, propaganda is not an end in itself, but a means to an end. If the means achieves the end, then the means is good. The new ministry has no other aim than to unite the nation behind the ideal of the national revolution. Joseph Goebbels. I'm just illustrating I'm saying these things not to be hyperbolic, but to tell you, like, the song remains the same, you know? And that there's nothing new here. We're falling for the same old tricks again and again and again. Do you have the other one that I sent you? There was the other Nazi. You know, and I was listening to a podcast one time, and I remember it being back in around when podcasting was still relatively new, say 2007, 2008, and they were reading this speech, and whenever you heard the words, you would have sworn this was something that George W. Bush had just, you know, read in the run up to, you know, the Iraq War, right? Because it had all the buzzwords in it about, you know, the homeland, defending the homeland, and truth and God on our side, and all these types of things, and it was totally a speech by Hitler. Because I remember asking these questions when reading, you know, some history books, you know, that how is it that Germany was, you know, led into World War II after being completely decimated, you know, less than 20 years previous in World War I? Well, you read the textbooks that we learned in school, and you use this funny little Austrian man with a funny little mustache that could give really good speeches. And everybody lost their minds and went out and slaughtered a bunch of Jews. Well, there was a little bit more to the story than that. And the propaganda was right there at the heart of it. And we have this thing here in this country now where if you ever, you know, mention Nazis during a debate or a conversation, that the conversation and debate is immediately over. Maybe it's because it rings so much truth or something. There was another quote that I was thinking about. Let's see if I can find it. I have to laugh. When the English claim they are such a wonderful nation, everyone knows that Englishmen are really Germans, that the English kings were German, and that in Russia, the emperors were either of German origin or received their education in Germany. Hermann Göring. And he was like the vice president under Hitler, I believe. I may be wrong on that. But my point is that These rhetorical masters are the ones that get elevated to the top of our society. And there's a good reason for that. You know,
they have the psychological backing and somebody that they've bought or something.
Because, I mean, we talked about this. I think we touched on a little bit last week about Obama, what a silver-tongued devil he was, and how...
He was a good orator.
I mean, and he received a Nobel Peace Prize. And all the while, he expanded Bush's two wars and multiplied them into like five or seven new wars, depending on, you know, which one you're looking at. But either way, it was all done while he was weaving a tapestry of words, right? And he had us all arguing about what? What were we arguing about? Socialized medicine. I remember back in the, even the conspiracy theorists were harping on about, you know, Obamacare is going to undo this country. And one more quote. This one is from George Orwell. We are all capable of believing things which we know to be untrue. And then, when we are finally proved wrong, impudently twisting the facts so as to show that we are right. Intellectually, it is possible to carry on this process for an indefinite time. The only check on it is that sooner or later, a false belief bumps up against solid reality, usually on a battlefield. George Orwell, 1946. And he's talking about the way the human mind does these mental gymnastics. Whenever we get muddled in our own belief structures, and I'll be damned if I'm going to look at a different point of view because I know what I believe and I believe what I know. The belief systems can be very dangerous whenever they run up against things like this, what that man was talking about.
It's good to have values and beliefs. However, use your critical thinking.
Right, right.
And don't just rely on your ancestors and your elders and your propaganda and your media.
Right.
It's not safe. We have to protect our mind and get out there and pay attention.
Because you need to question everything, right?
Yes.
Absolutely.
And keep learning, because I feel like the older I get, the more I'm encouraged to just, you know, stay in the rut and like, oh, this is my life now. But that's not the case. I've heard stories from Donnie's family where, you know, people waited till they're in their 40s or 50s or even 60s before they decide this is my passion and this is what kind of work I'm going to do to make money.
And
it's never too late to do that.
And the last quote that I'm going to use as we are running out of time, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Do you know who quoted that?
No.
Yeah, that's Article 1. The Bill of Rights. So that's Amendment 1 to the Constitution.
Okay, well, we'll definitely have to pick this up. We may have to talk more about verbal abuse and how we'll handle that as people for our health and our mental sanity and use our critical thinking. But stay tuned for proof. We appreciate you listening.
Everybody get out and practice your First Amendment. Worship where you want to worship. Say what you want to say. Assemble with one another. Thank you very much for tuning in to us today.
See you next week.
Yeah. Carry on. Bye-bye.
Buenos dias, world, from the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance. I'm Marco Wendt.
And I'm Rick Schwartz. and we're your hosts for Season 3 of Amazing Wildlife, a show from iHeartRadio Ruby Studio and the global conservation organization behind the San Diego Zoo and the San Diego Zoo Safari Park.
Listen as we dive into the efforts here in San Diego and spotlight the heroes working worldwide to care for the species you know and love.
Listen to Amazing Wildlife on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the smell of a warm 3-day-old egg salad sandwich in a Wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, Wimpy, Wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a hefty, ultra-strong trash bag with new Fabuloso lemon scent.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Smell the difference? When life gives you stinky, get Hefty Ultra Strong with new Fabuloso lemon scent. It smells like clean, freshly picked lemons. So no matter what's inside your trash, you can stop the stink and smell the lemon.